Good morning to each one, and greetings in Jesus' name. Thank you for coming out today to God's house. It's a good place to be gathered, as Larry mentioned, in and out of the weather. Reflecting on the song we sang before Sunday school, one of the songs, In Thy Holy Place, the third verse is like this: On thy holy bread we feed, hunger nevermore we know. Thou suppliest all our need, Father, whither shall we go? Ne'er forsaking, here partaking, bread our souls to satisfy. Here abiding and confiding, we shall never want nor die. And that has to do with the subject this morning. The title of the subject is, We Are What We Eat. We are what we eat. The first point I'd like to make is the title as a statement is not literally true. It is conceptually true. If you research a little bit or get around, there's a list of people over the years that has accumulated called freaky eaters. So just thinking of the title is true, not literally true, but conceptually true. There was a 29-year-old woman named Amber who ate only fries for 26 years. That's all she ate. Nothing more, nothing less, fries. Fries. And I like some fries, but not that many fries. Not that often, not that many years. Now, she didn't turn into a French fry. In other words, we are what we eat is the title. But she did not turn into a French fry. Or the woman who was addicted to Coca-Cola, she drank 30 cans of Coca-Cola a day. She did not turn into Coca-Cola. So the title is conceptually true, not literally true. We are what we eat is true in that there are consequences, results, effects upon the body from our food choices. So it'd be more like this. If you remember history in school, and I don't remember, I looked it up this morning, but it was the sailors. The sailors in the old days got scurvy. It's estimated that 2 million sailors died from the time of Columbus to the 19th century. And if you were a sailor in the old days, it was true that 50% of the sailors would die from this disease. And this disease was caused by consuming foods that lacked vitamin C. So they were what they ate, meaning that it affected them. Now, this sermon is not about the food we choose to eat. It's not about food. We are what we eat. My thoughts have been on the information age that we live in and the information that comes to us and that we consume, the abundance of it, where all we get it, what all it is. We are what we eat. So what if we would apply this truth, we are what we eat, to the information age that we're living in, and how it affects Christian living? What if we consider the information diet we consume and the effects it has upon our Christian health? We are what we eat. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12, I'm going to consider our text. There's a few verses I'd like to read. I'd like to read three separate passages or verses from different passages. Three separate passages, yes. But I'd like to start with 1 Corinthians 6. As we think about this information age that we live in and how we're going to deal with it, I would consider 1 Corinthians 6:12 to be our goal. All things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. I will not be brought under the power of any. Now, Paul was not saying this. He said all things are lawful. He did not mean that sinful things are lawful. We'll touch on that a little later. But he just goes through, in previous verses, he goes through sins that people commit, and they will not inherit the kingdom of God. But he's saying there's a lot of things out there that there's really... It's lawful. There's not a lot wrong with them, But not all of that is profitable or good, or it can affect our Christian health in a negative way, is what he's saying. So it is our goal, as we think about this subject this morning, it is our goal that I will not be brought under the power of any, as we consider the information age we live in and the information coming at us. Now, turning to Daniel, I found this interesting, Daniel chapter 12. He's speaking of the last days, and he says this about the last days in verse 4 of chapter 12. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. And then he says, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. We live in a time of increased knowledge, increased information. And then going to Acts 17, verses 20 and 21. This is what can happen to us. Acts chapter 17, verses 20 and 21. Paul was speaking at, I think it was Mars Hill here, and they say after Paul had told them some things and brought some things to their attention, for thou bringest certain strange things to our ears, we would know therefore what these things mean. And then it says in verse 21, it's explaining who these people were or what their interests were. It says, for all the Athenians and strangers which were there spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear some new thing. So the information age that we live in is, yes, different in a lot of aspects, but the problem is as old as creation. To get off track, to take in information we should not, or too much. The information age, according to Google, is the idea that access to and the control of information is the defining characteristic of this current era in human civilization. And I think the key phrases in that statement is access to and control of. We live in an age, in an era, that access to information is just, I mean, it's literally at our fingertips. And the volume, and we'll get into that, I'll keep repeating that if I'm not careful. And the control of. You take the subject of politics, for instance. The information war that is going on in politics is just unbelievable. And you really, if you want to follow politics, and I don't much, I know a little bit what's going on, but you literally have to just after a while either don't believe anything or choose who you believe. The information is coming so fast and thick, and people try to get, one party tries to get their information out ahead of the other to get people thinking in that direction, and then it's a mess. But it's the control of information, and it's a defining characteristic of our era. So when did the information age begin? We touched on this, but I believe it began on day 6 of creation when God created man and woman. The information age began there. Why? Because at the fall, man and woman had access to information that God had given and information that Satan offered, and it seems probable that Eve informed Adam of her communication with the serpent when offering the forbidden fruit to Adam. Information age began on day 6 of creation. And it's vital, I believe, to comprehend and accept the fact that the premise of information offered is either good or evil, and mankind having to choose which to believe has not changed. We just talked about Adam and Eve. They were created. God said, don't eat of the tree. Satan comes along and says, hath God said? And Eve takes of the forbidden fruit and says to Adam, you know what, I just ate some of this. The serpent said this, God said that, but you know what, it tasted really good. There was choices. Look, and so they had to choose. Eve had to choose. Do I believe God and obey him? And do I listen to what Satan's saying? Adam said, do I listen to Eve? And God said this. I didn't hear the serpent. I didn't hear what he said. But he was processing information. And this premise is still true, that information is offered as good or evil, and mankind still needs to choose what to believe. It has not changed. What has changed is rapid access to information, greatly accelerated volume, and accelerated information wars in an effort for power and control over people. Now let's just step way back in time, if we can, in our imagination. I tried to do this myself. I can only imagine the possibility of being able to receive information only from those you meet in person on a given day. You could only receive information and communicate with those you met in person. And on top of that, to meet a person or for a person to meet you, the only mode of travel is limited to our two legs. Now, how much information would come at you in a day? Not too much. Now, if you lived in a town or a city or a burg, but I'm thinking going way back. In Bible times, they had their little villages and cities, and so there was probably more interaction there, but it's still, you only communicated with those you met in person. Think about that. I can only imagine the amazement of observing for the first time information that was written down, sent away from the writer, and another person receiving that information by reading it. And in this way, information was increasing. It gave another medium by which to inform others and to receive information. Now, not only was it those you met in person in a given day, but something could be written down and passed. And so it was an increase in information, and the information was consumed, and it had an effect upon the hearer. Imagine the first compilation of writings into a larger volume, and it's a book. Can you imagine the very first time you saw a book, or that the very first time there was a book, and the awe of people that liked information, that enjoyed information, saying, wow, now I have all this information to consume and to read. Information to consume. Is it true? Thinking about this book, these books that are being written now. So books just came out. Is it true or false? Good or evil? And imagine the writers seeing their readers gobble up that information, consume it, realizing its effect, and realizing the great power to move people. Imagine the thirst for books when they were scarce, because only a human scribe, by hours of human toil, could produce a single book. The desire to consume information. I wonder if there were parents who were concerned about the content and the amount of time spent reading in those first years of reading books. Imagine the invention of the Gutenberg printing press, where now books could be turned out. Now, it no longer took months or years to write for a scribe to write a book, but now there was a printing press, and it would only take maybe weeks to make a single book, or maybe months. I don't know how long it took. But nevertheless, it was an advance. It was something that it was producing information at a faster rate, an accelerated rate, and the volume was increasing. Imagine the first public library. The internet of its day, not? Maximum information. The first library. Never before had that been. Books were passed around. Some people had more books than others, but the first public library. Maximum information, true, false, good, and evil. I wonder if anyone raised concerns about that. Imagine the invention of voice transmission, audio recording, photography, more and more and more ways to consume and to pass information around. We live in the age of digital information, so there's no need to imagine it. It's our reality. It is our reality. It is where all the inventions of accessing and transferring information can be culminated into a singular device, some so small and handy that we can carry them wherever we go. It is not only a newspaper, it can be hundreds of newspapers. It's not only a local library of books, but it is the availability of more books than the Library of Congress, I guess. And they can all be in your pocket. We can listen to music, watch videos, be instructed, amused, or otherwise by podcasts, teachers, audiobooks, etc., etc. We can receive calls from our next-door neighbor or a friend on the other side of the globe, or 13 calls a day from our scamming friends from who knows where, along with 19 business calls and 7.5 calls about local happenings. 25 messages to process about a teenager who was mutilated in a tractor accident who we didn't even know. And finally, just before we drop into bed, we receive the bright news that a 91-year-old man passed on into glory. And would you believe it? He had 14 children, 114 grandchildren, 214 great-grandchildren, and we never heard of the man before. Information. Information, information. I want us for a moment to try to grasp the torrent or the tsunami of information we have available and that we deal with every day. From where we are, go the whole way back to Adam and Eve in the garden, where they communicated with them, between themselves and with God. And as the family grew, you only communicated with those you met on that you met with your two feet. It's almost not comparable. Where it's so accelerated in our day. Now, I'm not an anti-digital person, but at the same time, I believe there are challenges that come along with our age that we do well to talk about, and how it can affect our Christian health. I believe that this torrent or this tsunami of information that we have to deal with every day brings a certain tension to human relationships and a certain tension in our relationship with God, or I should say it can. In a lot of ways, I think I should say it does. Because so much needs attention, and the volume of what we are running through our processors, our minds, is hundreds of times more than back in the Garden of Eden. And so we are torn in so many directions. And you can get X amount of calls in a few hours where your mind is ripped one way and this terrible event happened here and then it's ripped the other way. And in between you're taking business calls and you're trying to deal with just the normal decisions of life. So there's a certain tension. And I don't know what all the answers are for that, but I wanted to bring our awareness to that. Because I think it is affecting our lives. It's affecting our Christian lives. There's no need to be overcome. There's no need to be overrun. And there's no need to be not be profitable for God and not be the person we need to be. This is the world we live in. And there's a certain and we have to face it with courage and with vigor. But we need to know what to do with it. We need to know how to be healthy in this environment, in this information age that we live in. Healthy for God. Now, a question, as we think about that volume, a question, what have I become? Because of all of this, and the world that I live in, and the information that is just pouring my direction, what have I become? Because I believe it is conceptually true that we are what we eat. We are what we eat. Now, to be clear, I'm including every medium of information accessibility. And there's a few things I'll just that I'll mention here. I have yet to understand how to be well read is a good thing, and to be well Googled is not, or how it's great for a person to read the newspaper or a book for a few hours, and it's not a good thing to be on the phone a few hours. I'm processing all that amongst all these other thousands of calls. I'm processing that. But I hear that. I say, oh, he's well read. That's a good thing. But Google's another. So my point is, I'm including every medium of information accessibility. I'm not just saying it's a digital thing, or it's a computer thing, or it's a phone thing. The overarching question is, are we being distracted from living properly for God? Are we being distracted from living properly for God? Because the amount of information that we are processing, it is easily possible to be distracted from the things that we should be doing. As we consider this question, I'd like to look at four points to just check ourselves. Where am I? Where are you? And some things we can do, hopefully, to, if we need help, to correct that. The first question is, am I good or evil? Let's turn to Psalm 26. Verses 4 through 12. Psalm 26, verse 4. I have not sat with vain persons, neither will I go in with dissemblers. I have hated the congregation of evildoers and will not sit with the wicked. I will wash mine hands in innocency. So will I compass thine altar, O Lord, that I may publish with the voice of thanksgiving and tell all thy wondrous works. Lord, I have loved the habitation of thy house and the place where thine honor dwelleth. Gather not my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloody men, in whose hands is mischief, and the right hand is full of bribes. But as for me, I will walk in mine integrity. Redeem me and be merciful unto me. My foot standeth in an even or a good place. In the congregations will I bless the Lord. He's saying here, as we ask the question, am I good or evil, it is in the context of the information that I am consuming. What I am eating, consuming in information. And David, it says the Psalm of David, the psalmist says here that he's not going to sit with vain persons. He's not going to receive the information, and he's not going to exchange ideas. He will not go in with the dissemblers. He has hated the congregation of evildoers. He will not sit with the wicked. He'll wash his hands in innocency, and then he says what he will do. He'll be in the house of God. He loves the house of God. He's in a sound place. He'll walk in integrity. Jeremiah 15, verse 17 says something similar. Jeremiah 15, 17. He says here, I sat not in the assembly of the mockers, nor rejoiced. I sat alone. You hear this? I sat alone because of thy hand. For thou hast filled me with indignation. Here's another writer, Bible writer, that's saying he's not going to receive evil from the evil man. He said, I sat alone. It caused him to make a choice in the information that he was consuming. It's about the influence of evil men. Point number one is, am I good or evil? And so I'm thinking about the information that is out there that is accessible to us. The evil information, the sinful information, the morally corrupt information, books, podcasts where vile men may have good things to say, but the language is vulgar, or there is cursing and swearing. How can we sit at the feet of that kind of information? Recently, a name came up about a podcast somewhere. I can't even remember what the man talks about, but I checked him out a little bit, and his language is vulgar. And I said to myself, how can we sit at the feet of these kind of men and drink in the information that they have? How can we do that as Christians? We are what we eat. In other words, we are affected. If reading material or lyrics of a song is of such content that a video of it would be objectionable, then isn't the lyrics of the song or the reading material objectionable? See, I think we're getting a little weak in this part. Wait, it's a book. It's just words. It's just words. And we're focusing on this new movement, which we need to. But let's think about the books, the paperbacks. If the words of those books would be objectionable in a video, why isn't it objectionable as words? Now, you're going to be able to pick that apart a little bit because we have history. And there might be some things in history that you wouldn't want in a video. But what happens a lot of times in books and in novels and so on, it is written in such a way to exploit or to make sin and evil appealing. False religion. Am I good or evil? Ungodly music, lyrics of rebelling against authority, lyrics of fornication and adultery, lyrics of alcohol and drug use. We cannot purposely place ourselves under the influence of ungodly information and expect to survive a right relationship with God. We can't expect that. We need to rid ourselves of evil. Philippians 4. We know this verse, almost could quote it, should be able to. 6-8. Just reading a few verses prior to the verse after. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known made unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. You hear the promise. But then he says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. See, here's where the Christian's mind needs to be. This needs to be our rule, our guide, as to the thought of, am I listening? Am I hearing? Am I reading? Am I seeing wrong information, evil information, sinful information, morally corrupt? No, we need to move away from that, and we need to focus on the things that are right and lovely and true, like Philippians says. Second point of the message is, am I maximizing my profitability rather than minimizing? Found an interesting verse in Isaiah, or verses, Isaiah 48. Verses 16-18, God speaking, come ye near unto me, hear ye this, I have not spoken in secret from the beginning, from the time that it was, there I am, and now the Lord God in his Spirit hath sent me. Thus saith the Lord, thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am the Lord thy God, which teacheth thee to profit, which leadeth thee by the way that thou shouldest go. Oh, that thou hadst hearkened to my commandments, then had thy peace been as a river, and thy righteousness as the waves of the sea. He's saying that God has instruction for us to keep us profitable. And we'll look at some of those areas of profit. Profitable in my responsibilities. You see, as information comes, as we are so busy processing information, so much is coming at us. I want to ask the question, are we profitable in our responsibilities? The responsibility, let's go first to the male gender. If you are a husband, are you being profitable in the responsibility of being a husband, in caring for your wife, in caring for her emotional needs, her spiritual needs, her physical needs? You see, as life is coming at us so fast, we are torn. We can be torn because of all the information. We're so busy mentally that we don't see what's happening. We don't recognize what's happening, or sometimes we just ignore what's happening. I'm asking the question, are we profitable in our responsibility as a husband? Are we profitable in our responsibility as a father? Because we talked about earlier at this tsunami wave of information that comes out of this torrent, it can be a distraction from the things that God is asking us to do as Christian fathers. Caring for our children, speaking with our children, all the things that goes into being a father and caring for the children that God has placed in our realm of work. Are we being profitable in that? Or is it running at a minimum? Maybe we're a minister. Maybe we're a deacon. Maybe we're a bishop. Maybe you're a Sunday school teacher. Whatever you are, whatever the responsibility is that God has called us to, is there something about the information that is coming into what we are consuming that is minimizing our profitability in our responsibilities as husband, father, and other? Let's go to the female side of the house. Are you being profitable in your responsibility as a wife? Profitable. Are you caring for your husband? Is there something stealing your time? It could be down to, are you taking the time to think about the meals that he enjoys? Taking the time to put time into making that meal, washing the clothes, keeping the house. Being a mother, are you being profitable? Are you maximizing that profitability in your responsibilities? Are the children getting the proper attention and time? Or is there the information age that we live in, and the tsunami of information that is coming your way, is something suffering? Is something suffering? Why am I bringing this up? Because God has a lot of things to say about our roles in his word, the roles that we have to fulfill. And I don't have time to turn to all of those scriptures. I'm going to hit it from a broader umbrella way. But God has a lot of things to say what we need to be as fathers and as husbands and as a wife and as a mother. He has a lot to say. And the question is, are we being maximally profitable in that? Or are being robbed of that because of our information love? Our information processing. Maybe you're a teacher, school teacher. Maybe you're an employee. Employees, on the phone, on the clock, at the same time. I have a little whiteboard down at the shop where I wrote two rules for our shop, and I can't bring them to mind right now. But not a manufacturer, but in other words, you're behind machinery. And so when someone pulls away, it affects the profitability of the business. And I don't know where you are and what you do, but there's numbers out there as to what this has cost employers. The just the whole thing of feeling that we have to receive the information that's just over there beside us or right there on our side or in our pocket. So are you maximally profitable as an employee, as a teacher in school? Am I profitable in communicating to those in my life? Someone just mentioned recently, and it caught my attention, about fake relationships. Fake relationships that come out of digital messaging and so on. And I think there's probably something to that. There's something to that, because I know for myself, I can feel people out without being physically present with many people in a given day. I feel peopled out, and I didn't even meet hardly anyone. I'm peopled out because of all the interactions that I had digitally, messaging, whether it's business, even legitimate, not even wasting time. I'm not saying I don't waste time, but there's this whole thing that can happen there where we feel peopled out. And so I don't really want to, I need to recoup Sunday evening. I mean, why would I go visit anyone? I gotta restack my mental and emotional equity. I gotta restack it. And so I think it's creeping in where we feel so busy and so peopled out and so relationships, real personal relationships, meeting people for real face to face, is becoming something that's kind of sliding away from us, and I think it has to do with this. So what are we going to do about it? This is all discussion for all of us to help each other in. Am I profitable in work and learning skills? And I jumped ahead a little bit earlier there about the employee. I'm concerned that we learn life skills. Young men, there's skills to learn. There's a lot of information out there that you can gather and you can stack it in your head and it won't do a thing for you in life. Maybe that's too blunt. And maybe you love information and God bless you in that. But my encouragement would be to learn things and collect information that's gonna help you in life. That's gonna help you be of service to the church, and help you be of service to humanity. Learn life skills. Are we profitable in learning life skills? Sisters, young girls, learn how to cook and to sew and to take care of the house. Life skills. Or is there something robbing you of that? Where there's this block of time that it could have been skills learned. That's went up in smoke. If we could just grasp the volume of worthless information that is out there. Can I say that? The volume of worthless information that is available to us and the volume of worthless information that I consume. Doesn't do a thing. When you stack it up and look at the profitability of it, when you stack it up, it doesn't do a thing for me. It doesn't do a thing for anybody else. I just know it. I just put one more check mark on my list of what I know. And that's not all wrong. And I don't even know how to sort this one out, because there's some things that you would feel is worthless information that I might think is worthwhile. And so we're going to have to be civil with each other and reasonable. Because there's things that you like and enjoy and feel that you feel it's worthwhile, that I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't mean anything to me. Third point of the message. Am I mentally and emotionally able to bear the processing? Turn to me to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. I found this fascinating. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 15 through 18. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I commune with mine own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Here's a man that was drinking it up. He was consuming information. He said, he told himself, I got more than anybody else had before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive this also as vexation of spirit. Listen to verse 18. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. The more you know. Is that what he's saying? The more you know has the possibility of bringing more sorrow to your life. And the more wisdom that you have can bring more grief. So point number three is, am I mentally and emotionally able to bear the processing, thinking of our information age? I believe there are three areas of grief and sorrow that accompany increased consumption of information that may affect us. Mental processing, emotional weight, and use of time. All of those, and it doesn't mean that each individual is affected by all three, but probably at least one of those can affect us if our consuming of information is too great. And I would be one where the mental processing and the emotional weight, probably all three of those affect me, but I can only process a certain amount, and it starts to affect me in other areas of my life. The emotional weight of knowing who died from here to California and who got crushed under some massive piece of machinery from here to Canada, I can't handle it. And I don't think God ever intended for me to know all of that. There's this I think it's a telegram chat where they talk about all the people that got hurt and who's on the prayer list, and we nicknamed it the death chat. Am I mentally and emotionally able to bear the processing of what's coming at me? This overly full, it creates an overly full life for me mentally and emotionally. And there is an aspect of forced mental processing that comes with the information age. You say, well, we could go like some of our less progressive church denominations. We could get rid of everything digital. We could get rid of automobiles. We could get rid of even phone lines. I mean, we just keep stepping back. There could be some value in that, I suppose, but I don't think it's the answer. There's no guarantee of holiness in that, and I don't know if there's even guaranteed mental rest in that. But there is this thing that there's a certain forced mental processing that comes with the age we live in. And we sometimes feel mentally crowded. And you might be a person that says, well, bring the information to me. I can sort it out and process it, and I never get tired of it. Well, God bless you. He will use you in many great and wonderful ways, I'm sure. The fourth point I'd like to consider is, am I in control of the information I consume, or does it control me? And that's going back to the text verse where in 1 Corinthians 6:12, where he says, I will not be brought under the power of any. And I just love that statement given there, where I believe Apostle Paul is the writer, and we know the Apostle Paul as a disciplined man. He's a man, he's a decisive man, he's a disciplined man. And he says, I don't know what his voice tone was like, But when I read that verse, it sounds like a decisive and authoritative tone. I will not be brought under the power of any. Boom. He's done. And he has decided where he is. He has decided what will power his life. He has decided what will not power his life. And there's where I believe the answer is. The answer is not in stepping back, and finally getting rid of every progress and every advance of knowledge and every advance of wisdom that we have ever come to, but it is in a spiritually disciplined people that look at their lives and say, what am I missing? What am I letting go? What am I being responsible for? Am I fulfilling my duties? Am I doing what God wants me to do? And they look at that and they say, okay, then here's I am or I'm not, and here's what we're going to do. There's an aspect in every era where we are just swept along with a pace. I mentioned this before. Swept along with a pace. However, it is still very true that we each have been given a steering wheel and a set of brakes. We each have been given that. And I don't know how to sort all that out either quite, because if today I decided that the whole digital world was too much for me, including landline phones and automobiles and everything, and I would just step back, I probably could no longer be your pastor, because I couldn't keep up with the information that I need to keep up with so that I could help guide this congregation. And so there is a part of it that we are swept along. But we have each been given a steering wheel and a set of brakes. And so we need to be people of discipline. And we need to be reasonable with each other. And if a person says, you know what, I have to pull away from this right here, or I need to pull away from this, and I need to be here in this whole information deluge. I need to be here. We need to be gracious with each other in that. We need to be gracious and allow room for that, and not feel that people are odd or off to the side or weird or whatever. Or if there's those that just love that and they thrive on that and they do all of their responsibilities well and nothing is being they're not distracted and nothing being pushed to the side, we need to be gracious. But we need to be a people of discipline. I will not be brought under the power of any. And I believe Paul was saying that he said because it's he said all things are expedient, but he said I will not be brought under that power. And because it wasn't, some things were not expedient or not in or not for his best interests. So I need to determine if I am in control of the information I consume. The addict generally knows the product of addiction is harmful, but is powerless to the desire for more. In other words, the addict says, you know, maybe he's an alcoholic or he's addicted to drugs. And he's like, I know it's killing me. I know it's killing me. But guess what? A day later, 2 days later, a week later, that desire, that he goes back at it again. And he comes back to that. It's killing me. It's killing me. I don't feel good. Powerless. The addict generally knows the product of his addiction is harmful, but is powerless to the desire for more. You know, most of our digital devices have a report center that tracks our time use by category. It'll tell you how much time you spent listening to music, how much time you're on YouTube, how much time you're messaging. And you know, I have found that really, really helpful. I love that. I love it. I go to that. In fact, today, I think it gives that report on Sunday. And I go to that and it's like, did I actually spend that much time? It's there. It's documented. That's good. We need to go look at those. That's the facts. And then we need to ask ourselves the question, what didn't I do that I should have done? Did it steal from something important? This important information is for our use, and it's to better ourselves. Just a few concepts in the end here, a little direction. There, in 2005, I was ordained January 8th, 2005. And this past January 8th is probably the first time I didn't think of it. It went past, and just actually thought of it yesterday. I thought, well, that anniversary went by, and that's a good thing. You just let it in the past, and it just becomes another day. But I was standing right here when a brother come through the line, and he told me this. He's in relation to how busy I want to be, or how busy life can be. He said, I want you to remember this. He said, we cannot say yes to something without saying no to something else. And we cannot say no to something without saying yes to something else. I want to apply that to what we eat, what we consume in information. The amount of time that we spend reading the paper, reading a book, being on our phone, messaging people, whatever it is, on the landline, wherever you receive your information, when we are doing that, we are saying yes to that. That doesn't mean it's wrong. We are saying yes to that. But while you're saying yes to that, you cannot do this over here. So you're saying no to that. It's a pretty easy concept, right? In other words, you can't do two things at one time. And the question is, when I'm saying yes to this information that's coming in, whatever it is, whenever it is, however it is, the length of time it is, what am I saying no to? What am I saying no? Am I saying no to my spouse? Am I saying no to my children when they're crying? Baby needs his diaper changed. Now I got to figure out, you know, who died in California. What are we missing? When I say yes to this, what am I saying no to? It's a pretty simple concept. If we are at a place in our information consumption that we know we shouldn't be and seem powerless to change, confide in someone that can help you be accountable. Be open to the observation of parents, spouse, children, siblings. Parents, it's okay to be open to your parent or to your children's observation. If they say, you know what, Dad, you spend a lot of time on your phone. Open both eyes and tilt your ears forward. It's going to take this. It's going to take this to be profitable for the kingdom of God like we should. And just a few things. For the Christian, anything evil must go. It has to go. You don't temper evil. You don't compromise with evil and say, well, it's we try to moderate it. No, all evil must go. Secondly, for the Christian, anything that keeps us from performing very well our God-given responsibilities must be laid aside. It needs to be laid aside. Because God gives us a lot of direction in how we are to fulfill our responsibilities. For the Christian, there is a call to be temperate in all things. 1 Corinthians 9:25, and every man that striveth for the mastery or striveth to win is temperate in all things. Now he's thinking about the Olympic Games that started back in Greece. And he says, now they that play the games, they do it to obtain a corruptible crown or some earthly reward. But he said, we do it to receive the incorruptible, or the spiritual, or the heavenly. We are what we eat is a conceptual truth. The volume and type of information we are consuming has effect upon us. May we make proper choices to ensure our spiritual health. Let's pray.